Welcome to the 24th Macro and Volatility Podcast. Today is Monday, October 6th, 2025. My name is Eric Bender, and I'm joined by two experts, Michael Purvis, CEO of Talbach and Capital Advisors, a cross-asset macro research firm, and Josh Silva, CIO of Passaic Partners, a derivative specialist and manager of institutional advisory assets. Before we dive into today's topics, we ask that if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility Podcast on your platform of choice, Bloomberg, and LinkedIn. As always, Michael is available to discuss his institutional research offering, and Josh is available to discuss his derivative solutions. All right, let's get into it. Michael, it's been an exciting start to the month. How are you seeing the world right now?
Well, Eric, I mean, it's a little bit of a cliche or very obvious thing to say, but risk is very much on right now. We have very strong risk appetite, but there's reasons for it, right? So, you know, we're coming out of the last earnings season was surprised very pleasantly to the upside, pretty much across the board, few exceptions there. But in addition to that, you have this concurrence of monetary and fiscal stimulus here against a backdrop of 3% plus GDP. We'll see how the rest of the year comes in. You have an AI CapEx boom. You have, in theory anyway, an AI-driven productivity boom that should help margins and earnings prospectively. There's this sort of deregulation foot to fall at some point there. But it's not every day. You have the Fed embarking on a new cutting cycle with the GDP at 3%, and employment is far from perfect there. But the broader economic story and is still holding together pretty well here. So yeah, valuations are really expensive. We all know that here, but I think they're going to stay really expensive because the macro backdrop is reflecting risk on. So we're going to have to see some real degradation in earnings, real degradation in the economy to start really starting to see this risk on, really pivot to something more bearish here. But, you know, Eric, there's another I think, theme here that we really need to talk about. You asked about how things are, you know, really kicking off in this quarter here. We're recording this on October 6th. The neat, you know, the SPX made a fresh highs last Friday, but so did the SX5E, the Euro stocks. So did the Nikkei, and that was before the election. Even the Toronto Stock Exchange has been putting in fresh lifetime highs here. And if you look at earnings, for example, earnings in a lot of these overseas indices are accelerating pretty nicely here. Some of them had been in a malaise in Q2, but they're really picking up here. And, you know, frankly, the ISMs through many of the world's most important economies are printing higher and trending better than they are here in the United States here. So I think it's important just because it reinforces this sort of risk on. I think a lot of us were expecting that, you know, global trade and a global recession risk was something serious. But what we're seeing here is that thus far, not just is the U.S. economy able to weave itself through the tariffs or navigate the tariffs, but so are these other economies here. You know, in fact, Germany's industrial production has really been picking up nicely here, which is somewhat surprising, but it is. There, Japan and China are far from perfect right now, but they're still hanging in there, doing pretty well.
So the solution for higher prices is higher prices.
Right now, that's the charts are telling you that.
Right, Josh. Let's take Michael's macro thought to the next derivative. How are you reading the volatility markets, and both on the equity side and cross asset volatility?
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of been classically as through my life, I've been sort of fighting this to a certain degree. But I feel like, you know, what happened in September and August, I think people have really dusted off their 1998, 1999 playbook, in particular, and what's been going on in tech. And what do I mean by that? It is very difficult to be short single name tech volatility right now. in the way that things are moving. I mean, every day there is a new winner. One day it's Oracle, the next it's Micron, and this morning it was AMD. So being short vol or being short right tails, as Michael and I have talked about, is a significant risk in the tech names as the story moves from one name to the next. So markets are pricing right these right tails all over the place in a lot of these sort of any possibility of being a winner AI tech names. Dispersion trading again, which is something that Michael and I have discussed in the past, is again trading at a new at low level. So index volatility is following single stock vol up. So while it looks like the VIX is expensive, let's say, versus realized in the 16, 17 range, it's not, considering where dispersion is or where the correlation of stocks is. So correlation is very, very low. In realized terms, single stock vol is very high, and so it's keeping index vol primed up or a little bit more expensive. What does that mean? It means as markets go up, volatility goes up. This is sort of one of those things we saw in the 90s, and we're seeing now. And again, this is important to keep in mind that this isn't something that hasn't happened. It has, and people are nervous about, you know, what that means for vol going forward. As Michael talked on the worldview, look at Japan today. So we had an election. The yen is down 1.5%, but the Nikkei is up over 4.5% as the election moved the government to more of a pro-growth government. So we're having these sort of, you know, more debt, more growth type governments, sort of the stuff that Trump has been trying to put into the United States. We're starting to see a little bit across the globe. I think one of the statements was the new prime minister of Japan is almost like the Trump of Japan. And so we are seeing sort of similar type movements in their debt markets and in their stock markets. The globe, again, continuing to grow with more debt. The question is that sustainable? I don't know, but we're at all-time highs, and vol is going to hold up here because of that. Like it's hard to be short risk when we're at all-time highs with these debt situations. The last thing is gold just moves up every single day. I think that's a little bit of a way of people hedging currency risk or hedging the sovereign risk. So while people in the past have hedged risk by owning bonds, I think they're actually using more gold this time as a way of hedging risk. And you're seeing the devaluation of currencies with this rising debt and rising stock market. And I don't see that ending anytime soon. Lastly, it just seems like every asset goes up together. So the question will be, will they all go down together? And again, this is going to keep a sort of a bid on riskier assets like equities and commodities vol up. People aren't going to be willing to sell those. So that is going to keep a bid up, vol up across gold, vol up across equities type situation.
Thanks, Josh. Michael, how do you see this kind of second order as it relates to the cross asset
Yeah.
volatility relationship?
Look, I mean, we've talked in the past how cross asset vols are still really low, most notably, you know, for all the excitement in the headlines and the political developments. Look, you know, Treasury vol has really come in at the lows of the cycle, FX vol right in tune. The VIX is, you know, the volatility risk premium Josh alluded to, like it closed at over 10 points in the midst of a bull market. That's a very rich premium. And certainly there are a lot of folks who are shorting, you know, index vol here. They're given how rich that risk premium is there. But look, I think the collectively, you know, the cross asset volatility short, and you can extend that to even gold vol is not very high given how strong gold has rallied. Oil vol is not really doing, you know, anything special with oil consolidating here. So I think ultimately all that stuff helps sets the stage for a risk you know risk a continued risk rally here. As Josh refers to, yeah, of course we could have an abrupt reversal of that, where correlations across asset classes and across regions go to one. I think one thing that I do really want to talk about, because Josh picked up in this late 1990s analogy and how we're rhyming with that period. One thing that I really see within the equity complex in the United States is that if you look at the Mag 6 or Mag 7, right, that valuation, you know, people feel like, oh, I got to rotate out of that into, you know, cyclical or something, you know, maybe a different AI play. But the reality is those the earning streams coming from those companies is pretty relentless. And if you look at the PE relative to the expected growth over the next 12 months in the Mag 6, that price earnings to growth ratio is in its bottom decile going back several years. And in contrast, the SPX equal weight price earnings to growth ratio is in the top decile going back several years. So what's expensive and what's not? To me, it's the fundamentals here and the valuations are very much sort of disconnected. And as it relates to that 1999, 2000, when does this bubble burst? It's not a might, you know, it's the PEG ratios sort of put that big tech pillar of the rally in a very different position here. So
Yeah,
I
Michael,
think there's
I think it's important. Like, people forget Cisco was a 70 PE. We don't have any 70 PEs out there. So I think that's a good thing to point out.
yeah, you do, but not in the important
Not in
stocks,
the Mag 7 stuff. That's what I mean. Not in the smaller, really growthy. Cisco is a major pillar of that rally. You know, we don't have NVIDIA at a 70 PE is basically what I'm saying, which I would call the pillar of this rally.
You have Tesla, I think 200
Yeah.
times. But that's why
That's
I
a
sort of
different
really focus on Mag
animal.
6 and
Yeah.
exclude that. But there are a lot of exuberance within parts of this market here. But I just want to get back to Eric's question here, because I think this idea of this sort of Mag 6 fundamental ballast here anchoring this broader stock market is still going to be with us here. Now, a year from now, 2 years from now, if some of the AI CapEx doesn't pay, well, that's a different thing. But for the here and now, I think that is a very, very important distinction, which is that price earnings to growth for those companies is very compelling. Price earnings to growth for the everything else part of the market, I don't find compelling. I do find something more interesting from an equity market perspective overseas right now, and I've got an eye on certainly Europe seems to be catching a second wind here, and as you mentioned, Japan.
What, you know, it's real interesting in the last week or two, Michael. I don't know if you've noticed the private equity stuff. The stocks haven't been, they've actually started to really underperform the market, which is, they're not in a lot of this AI stuff. So it's, I think that's sort of starting to price in a little bit in some of these names. It just was an interesting, I notice. One of the things we talked about also was sort of this relationship. And I, Purvis, you were talking about this earlier, the debt to GDP. And I think it's interesting is we've seen such a move higher in assets and such that, like, if I think about debt in relationship to gold, we've seen such a dramatic move. You could say the same thing about equities in relationship to debt. Like, equities and gold have so outperformed that new issuance of debt recently. It's really sort of one of those things where you ask this question of how, you know, while we haven't had inflation, is this asset inflation real? And I think it's something to keep an eye on as well. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think with respect to gold, and as you know, Josh, I've written a ton on that over the last, I don't know, really since 2007 and 8. But I look right now, I think when you think about what happened with these sort of political right-wing parties pushing pro-growth agendas through effectively high effectively incremental deficits to boost growth. And I think it's a really interesting story, because it's effectively, look, the big beautiful bill passed July 4th was per the CBO was 500 billion a year almost for the first 4 years, and then it comes down a bit. It looks like Japan is going on that too. There's an important backdrop before you get to these new political developments, which is that which is that if you look at contractual payments from the U.S. government were almost 18 to 19% of GDP, right? This is basically the entitlements plus interest payments on the debt, right? And that used to be 3 or 4% of GDP. And so that's very different from say the 1950s, where we inflated our way down to a much healthier debt to GDP ratio after World War II by virtue of the fact that those were one-time deficits. They were not contractual payments, right? That are just ongoing every year. So part of this experiment seems to be, wow, if you boost fiscal and you boost monetary at the same time against a decent economy, you're going to inflate your way out of the debt to GDP problem. That's sort of the bull argument for that condition. The problem you're going to, well, there obviously it comes with risk there, but I think the other thing is that so much in the modern condition is that the payments that coming out of the governments are contractual. They're not because of a one-time war event, which is what happened after World War II. So I think that's something that is happening. You also saw that same sort of narrative coming out of Le Pen on the far right in France there, and it seems to be that is where the path of least resistance is for a lot of the right wing populism or whatever you want to call it is right now. Ultimately, it means gold higher. It means those currencies will become weaker. Whether they're weaker to each other or weaker to the price of gold is another conversation. But I think right now, yeah, gold has got a bid. There's only so much of it, and it's going to keep,
Yeah,
you see every dip getting bought.
it comes down to the devaluation of currencies, and who's the we used to have this argument 15 years ago, the race to the bottom, and everyone's doing it together, which kind of pumps gold up a little bit. And I mean, the war, all I can say is it's a different approach, and we're going to see what the outcome is going to be, because the other approach was sort of, we were kind of, I don't know, it seemed like there was a lot of different outcomes. I guess
So,
that's, go ahead, Eric, I'm sorry.
yeah, so if there's a final thought, Michael, is it gold's going higher? Is that your are you gonna
Look,
are you gonna put your flag into the ground there and
well,
that's gonna be it?
I have. I mean, I think gold miners and silver miners are probably still have an amazing cash up trade, and they're still by most respects cheap. If you look at the GDX, the gold miners ETF, that cash free cash flow yield is like 3 times Microsoft's free cash flow yield, and that if Microsoft's supposed to have a high free cash flow yield, right? So it's just an interesting story about CapEx discipline and the fact that these companies are swimming in cash right now, meaning the gold miners. So I like that, but yeah, I think gold's going higher. I think a lot of other people do too, which makes me nervous. But I think the best way to play that is through the miners.
Yeah,
All right, Josh, what's your final takeaway
I
here?
think all assets go up or all assets go down. So it's a matter of which asset you want to pick to ride your, your horse in. Like, I think gold's up, stocks up. I just think that's sort of the way it is. Bonds are really not going anywhere. So we're going to find out how this goes, whether you're in the US, Europe, whatever your flavor of the month is. I think all assets either rise or all assets either sell. There is a certain amount of energy to this market, and I don't think you can, it's hard to fight that energy or the momentum. That being said, it's like one of those things. What's the saying, Purvis, from the 2000s? You want to stay on the dance floor as long as you can, but you don't want to be the last to leave. Was that the line?
Yeah, you have to be hyper vigilant for sure.
Yes, that's pretty much it for me then.
Well, thank you. So it sounds like all aboard the roller coaster here. It's going to be potentially up, potentially down. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Josh. As always, I learned a lot. You could find both of them on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective websites, talbotandcapital.com and pasaicpartners.com. Thank you all for joining us today, and remember, we're helping you keep an eye on what matters in the markets.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.